Here and Now listeners know Jamal Simmons as one of our Democratic political strategists. He's also the author of a recent essay addressing what he calls the 4% problem and the lack of Black leaders in our institutions. And he joins us now. Hey, Jamal.
Hi, how are you, Tanya?
I am well. So you've said in nearly every sector, Black inclusion stalls at about 4%, and you say that's not enough. Give us an example of what that looks like.
Yeah, so Tanya, what I started looking at after the George Floyd and Breonna Taylor murders is I started to take a look at all the statements that were coming out from all these companies and organizations that wanted to do something and tackle systemic racism. And the question began to appear to me whether or not these companies have the teams at the table who can actually deal with this problem. Are they really fully equipped to take on this challenge? So I looked at leadership at these most pivotal institutions. Let me just tell you one quick story. When I was at Harvard grad school, I was at the Kennedy School, and we had a student action. We called the leadership in to talk about the fact there were no Black tenured faculty at the school. Now, that was 25 years ago. Today, there are two Black faculty at the school out of 55. Mm. So in 25 years, the pipeline only produced two more people than it had in 1996. That's just not enough. That 4% problem is not enough. And so it's 3.6% at the Kennedy School, 3.5% at Harvard more broadly. Those numbers tended to kind of keep coming back at me at UVA and at Yale and University of Michigan and University of California, Berkeley. It didn't seem to matter geographically where you looked. The numbers kept coming.
Well, as you point out, this problem doesn't exist because there's a shortage of leadership candidates, though. I mean, you talk to a lot of experts. Why do you think the 4% problem continues to exist?
Well, one thing that happens is people begin to perceive more diversity than exists if there's a high-profile person of diversity that's present. So, for instance, Colin Powell was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the 1990s. Again, that was over 25 years ago. People often talk about the military as being the most egalitarian part of our society. The military is now 43% people of color. It's 17% African-American. But of the 41 commanders in all four branches who could possibly be chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, there are only two out of those 41 who are African-American. That's 4.9%. So what happens is when we see that person there, we think that we're more diverse than we are.
I know this is an obvious thing, Jamal, but I'm just thinking about even something so small as, you know, on the front brochure or page of anything, when you have like a group of people and you have a Black person, what mm-hmm. you're saying to the world is like, we promote diversity, we're a diverse place, even though on the back end of that, it might not be the case. And I think an institution would say, well, we do that because we're trying to say to other people of color, you're welcome here. But what it actually is doing is giving a false sense that there actually are people there.
Absolutely. And actually, it's even worse. There's evidence that one of the things people do is as a coping mechanism is people of color whiten up their resumes. So they may take off the fact that they were the head of the Black Student Association at University of Wisconsin. But if they see in the job announcement, diversity encouraged, you know, looking for people of color, whatever the language is, people say that gives you the cue, like, oh, we want more diversity. So people won't take the Black Student Association thing off their resume, but the recruiters are still operating with the same discriminatory mindset. So imagine it like this. Imagine a parking lot, and there are 100 spaces in the parking lot. You number all those spaces, 1 through 100. Around space number 4, you'll see a cluster of cars, right? So it's not exactly a ceiling. It's just this cluster that seems to happen around space number 4. And we see it in the C-suite. We see it in corporate boards. Amazon has this problem. Venture capital. If you start to go through the most pivotal institutions in American society, it just keeps coming back again and again around 4%.
Well, you're actually calling for something called a stage integration. And you acknowledge that some people might find this controversial. What exactly is staged integration?
So we've been at this integration game for over 50 years, right? We've been doing it since the 1960s. And if it's only yielding 4% African-Americans in the leadership of the most pivotal institutions, something's not working. So my argument is we need to maybe look at this a little bit differently. And instead of betting on superheroes to make it through big institutions and corporations, and you know, that are tilted against them, where there are not that many people for them to emulate, perhaps what we should do is laterally transition people into these organizations now. So let's stage them so that they can come in where it matters. Starting at the beginning, you know, in tech does most of its recruiting at five schools. And those mm-hmm. five schools in 2019 only had 24 black graduates in computer science combined, all five of them. University of Maryland, Baltimore County, which is led by Freeman Hrabowski, who's African-American president of the school, they had over 80 black computer science graduates. North Carolina A&T had over 40 black computer science graduates alone. So maybe the answer isn't just to keep doing things the way we have always done them, but to go find people where they are.
There was that program, though, at Google where they partnered with Howard University and students spent time on the Google campus. And while they've hired from that program, it didn't actually bore out the numbers expected, right?
Yeah, that informs my thinking, right? Because it may be that there is an institutional bias that exists here. The reality is Google doesn't recruit from Georgia Tech, let's say. It's one of the most mm-hmm. renowned institutions in the world. But if you have a founder and a team that's already building a product, is already working on ideas, you can now, it's not that big of a risk to bring them in. Now you've invested in them, you've worked with them, you've seen what they can do. You can bring them into the company from that position of leadership they had in their former company and not just bring them in fresh out of school.
Can you talk a little bit more, though, on how this will work? Because how might these institutions you're talking about work together to kind of make this pipeline work?
So I talked to Melissa Harris Perry, who was at MSNBC for a long time, one of the first black hosts, and also Reverend Al Sharpton. When they had their show, they particularly went out to find black pundits, black producers, to make them a part of their show. When Melissa Harris Perry left the network, Joy Reid took her position, African-American woman. She also made this a priority. So not all of these black-led organizations are black-owned, but what you see is black leaders tend to nurture new black talent, and we should be going to those black leaders to find that talent and reward them for their work in sourcing that talent, developing that talent into leadership of American institutions.
The operative word there is reward, because that can also be a lot of labor.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. You've got to reward them, because what you don't want to have happen is what's happened in the past. Companies and organizations come around. They cherry pick new talent from black-led organizations. They leave that black-led organization bereft of that talent. But if you're doing this as a staged process, as a formal relationship, maybe there's an exchange process that happens for some period of time. And then what you'll start to see is everybody benefits. The pipeline continues to grow. Darren Walker, who's now the president of the Ford Foundation, one of the biggest foundations in the world, he was at the Abyssinian Development Corporation in Harlem before he came there. This is a pipeline that already exists.
Well, you ask if executives really want more black leaders at the table, and you say probably not. Why and how do you break that cycle?
So I spent a lot of time talking to professors at business schools, and one of the things that comes up is this question of what they call prototypicality threat. That people think that their experience is the defining experience of any organization. So the idea of hiring somebody and bringing them in who doesn't fit their prototype can be discomforting. But we've got to be willing to change the culture, because as America changes, we're going to need to have new people at the table who do business differently. The world looks a lot more like America's going to look as we become a more diversified nation. But right now, this 4% has been operating almost like a unconscious tipping point, like in residential housing, where if it gets beyond a certain point, people begin to leave or they get a little nervous. So we've got to challenge it. We've got to tell the truth about it. And then we've got to look for some strategies to try to disrupt that 4% and get American organizations and companies and law firms and military, all these folks. We've got to get people comfortable with having more black people around the decision-making table.
Jamal Simmons is a Democratic political strategist whose piece, The 4% Problem, appears in Democracy, a journal of ideas. Jamal, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.